Hello and welcome to a long belated episode of the Scotchcast for the week of the 15th of July 2017. I'm your host, Sulkerfest Cynic, and joining me today is Squiddle.
Holy shit. We're still doing this thing? This is still a... Okay, I mean, I'm all for it. I just, you know, I don't want our lovely patrons of listening to think that, you know, we're going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. It's just that like no one has anything to talk about. And usually, like, I realize that
part No. You misunderstand me. I don't want them to think we're going anywhere. So, you know, just stop now and you'll feel better.
Probably. That's true. You shouldn't listen to this episode. There's not much to talk about, but we do have some things to talk about. Just before that, Squiddle, how you been? What have you been up to?
Busy work, trying to make arrangements for things, planning things. My grandfather's 90th birthday this year, so I'm doing the cinematography of all that, the producer of this thing.
Nice.
And not much else. Haven't been playing much of anything of distinct. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. The one thing I have been playing that I got into recently again was Postal 2. I started replaying that today, and that was fun.
Wait. All right. For people at home, I'm doing some live audio mixing. I was coming in a bit hot, so I might be a little bit quieter now. But what do you mean you're playing Postal 2, and why?
Well,
Wasn't that a terrible game? Like, I've heard Postal 2 was hot garbage.
So Postal 3 was hot garbage.
Okay.
Postal 2 is beloved overwhelmingly on Steam by everyone.
Oh, wow.
It has the overwhelming acceptance.
10 out of 10 on Steam. Holy shit.
Crude, trashy humor, you know, like, you know, all the kind of stereotypical, like South Park, but you get to shoot and piss on people.
Okay.
Quite literally. So I started replaying it again because I was like, oh, this was a fun game. I'm going to do something stupid. And then I went to their website because I'm like, I want to see if Running with Scissors is still around. Are they still a actual game company? Because they just came out with a DLC last year for their game, Postal 2, and a new update for like a remaster of their original. And so I find out, yes, they are. And then I was like looking around and on their site, they have a thing called Our Games where they talk about the Postal main series and then Postal games from other developers. This is what got me. The other developers has Postal 3 under it. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why? Uh-huh. That's your main series. Come to find out, they licensed it out to a Russian developer company,
yep,
thinking that, you know, they were going to be able to do something with it. Hard times fell on Russia. Mm-hmm. They put it to a smaller team that didn't know what they were doing. In the end, they say it's a broken game. It's horrible. Don't spend your money on it. But you're a big boy. You can decide what you want to do.
Nice. This is on their website.
Yeah. Oh, this is. I have the link. It's totally on their website. It's great to like. It's called Disclaimer of Shame, where they completely own up about how bad it is.
Wow.
For licensing it out. However, I bought this game when it came out, and I thought, oh, this could be great. A follow-up to my favorite Postal 2 game. And it was so bad. I never got past like the second area. It was just broken and things weren't working. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I finally understand why it was so broken. So that was my delve into gaming recently and a very exciting conclusion to that story.
Nice. All right, cool. So in short, Postal 2, it's still a video game and you like it.
It's still a video game. And I think they are probably working on a new game if I read somewhere. I hope so, at least. It's some good stuff.
And Running with Scissors, is that the developer?
Definitely a company that's not afraid to push the boundaries with games.
I'm going to look at runningwithscissors.com. So that's their website. So they didn't mention any new projects on there? Is that the deal?
No, I saw it like in a tweet somewhere from someone, or was it a forum post? I can't remember where I saw it.
Oh, sir, but the Insult Simulator.
Yeah, they licensed their character out to some other games, and they do some other stuff. So they still have a viable fan base. Maybe what would you call that? A small but loyal fan base.
This is so. Okay. Yeah. No. Wow. This is. They're just pretty much all about Postal. Like, surprisingly, I'm actually all right. But they have a podcast that's more regular than ours.
Well, I don't know. They do a video. They do a video pod. It's more of an audio.
Oh, okay. But, right. Wow.
Still.
Well, I'll go there.
But the kind of humor, the reason I like these guys is because the kind of humor that they have is the no holds bar, not politically correct, just tell it how it is, fun bullshit with each other. And that's what their game also leads to. So that's why I enjoy it.
I'm not surprised. I they came out with Postal, so that fits perfectly. All right. So with that being what you'd been up to, we're just going to... All right, so this week's episode, we're going to talk about news for a bit. Then we're going to talk about... Well, if you've only been playing Postal, then I will just be talking about Nier for a hot second. And then we're going to go into Prey stuff. So for people who may remember that a Prey game came out this year. Squid will finish it. I haven't, but we'll be doing a spoiler talk at the end of the show. So that's like the whole idea here. There may also be a post-recording with Durin and or Thurbleton, but we're still trying to get that together. You may have noticed, it's pretty difficult to get people in the same room. Like this episode is only an episode because there's two of us.
Yeah, it's rough right now. You know, come on. It's that time of year. Everyone's summer. Either out with friends. Yeah, it's hard to get everyone together. But hey, speaking of summer, I did do something else I completely forgot about that I should mention for gaming-wise before I'm cut off here.
You should save it to what we've been playing segment. We'll do it
well,
then. This needs to be said right now.
Let me just say it has to do with fabulous dresses. Okay, I'm just going to say that right now.
I'm scared.
I'll leave you dangling with that, okay?
So first up in news, D23 is on, and for people to know that is this Disney's bi-yearly, as far as I understand, expo. And they had a couple things shown there, but the weird thing is, like with Comic-Con before it, a lot of the stuff was just shown to the attendees. So there's a new Infinity War trailer, apparently. And apparently it's great. I don't know. Are you looking forward to Infinity War whatsoever?
No, not necessarily at all.
Are you a Marvel person? Like, do you like superhero movies?
You know, I like... Okay. I am a 90s Marvel kid.
Okay.
So I do not... I'm not a big fan of all the flash and panache and the whole orchestrated battles that they're doing right now. I miss just like X-Men. I mean, I want my fucking Gambit movie, for crying out loud. And I'm pissed that never happened, because Gambit was the best X-Men.
Oh my God.
In front of Wolverine ever. And he never got his day, and he never got his due, and I was so pissed about it.
I cut you off there, but I heard it as the best X-Men except Wolverine.
No, I mean in front. No.
Oh wow, no. Okay, I can't get behind that.
Yeah, no. I Wolverine's okay, but do anyone from the Southern Bayous, Louisiana,
who can
charge shit? I mean, that's my jam right there.
Yeah, and no, I can see why you're getting behind that. But honestly, no, it's Gambit was my second favorite X-Man, behind just Wolverine. That was it. I love Gambit. To be fair, he's apparently just a '90s kids dude. A lot of people who are like dying the wool X-Men don't like Gambit for whatever reason. I think he might have been an invention just a '90s kind of invention. But I thought he was sick. I just like his, like, I like his drawl, especially as he was in the anime, or I shouldn't call it an anime, the cartoon series.
The cartoonimation.
But more importantly, I just like the fact that he just didn't give a shit, you know? He was just a cool dude. You never knew he was actually a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah, he was the guy that, like, would be, like, probably smoking a cigarette beside the building. Instead, you had Logan come out with a cigar, and he's just, like, a cigarette just flicking at someone, you know? He's just that... mentality.
Exactly. He reminds me of like an old school detective. He's like a rogue.
Speaking of which, Rogue, my second favorite.
Really?
And then third is Wolverine. I loved Rogue. I thought Rogue was
Is it because Gambit had a thing for character. Rogue? Is that the
No, I liked Rogue because how the sheer emotionally sadness in her life, how sad that her life could be where she could never have human contact with anybody.
Mm.
Okay. Fuck everything else where someone has ability to heal themselves, Wolverine shit. Okay. But not be able to have a physical tie with anybody without killing them. Mm. And that was something they felt, man, that's so lonely, but yet so powerful at the same time to be able to channel that. And I could see that. That was so nifty.
I just didn't like, I can exactly see why you're saying that. I just, for me, just like her actual, like, you know, her actual character, I never got behind. I don't know.
And then Wolverine was just like, ah, spikes, kill you.
Wolverine's just also just one of those lone wolf badass types like Gambit. I don't know. I just kind of drawn to those kind of characters. That and like Cable's.
Don't get me wrong. The Logan movie was pretty amazing. Cool.
Oh, Logan was, yes. Anyway,
was an amazing movie.
Back to D23. So yeah, there was a Infinity War thing shown. Apparently, people were impressed. I don't know, man. I liked Captain America: Civil War, but that's only because I like the characters. I never really liked the villains in Marvel movies so far, except for the latest Spider-Man. The villain's pretty cool. I actually didn't mind.
I liked. Who's the guy who voiced Ultimate Metal Dude or
Spader? Dude? James Spader.
Yeah. I've always loved James Spader. Like he's one of those guys I could just listen to read me a book, and I would love to listen to his voice.
I love him in Boston Legal. He was my favorite character in that.
I never watched that show, and I never knew he was in that. I caught wind that he was still around with Blacklist.
Oh right,
and that's where I got reintroduced to him.
Is he?
And then I had no idea that was the same guy that was in Stargate. No fucking idea.
Wait, what? He was in Stargate. Yeah.
So the original Stargate movie. He was the skinny scientist dude.
I'm googling this right now. James Spader, Stargate.
Glasses and long hair.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Him now, and you're like, I've heard that he's so. And I'm like, holy shit, that was him.
That's so strange. He looks so young because he was.
I know.
So, wow. Oh, yeah. So he's like the doctor. Holy shit, he's like one of the main characters in that movie.
Yep. I would say probably the main character. I mean, you can argue, but you know, probably.
Yeah. It's been fucking forever since I've seen Stargate, so I don't remember. But yeah,
I'll have another bunch of nerd rage. People hate me. I actually like that movie. I thought it was a good movie. Everyone fucking hates it, but whatever.
I like the TV show. I don't remember the movie well enough. I think the movie had like nudity in it, so I couldn't watch it because I was young at the time.
Maybe a butt shot of something.
The first episode starts with a woman being like with the worm being put into a woman? Because I'm pretty sure
it's not a woman. That's a boy with makeup in Egypt.
Okay.
So, but they do the thing. I think what he possesses. But I think this is a possession. I don't know if it's a worm, though.
I don't fucking remember.
I know there's like a body possession type thing that happens.
All right. I just remember a naked lady. I don't know. Might be from a TV show. I have no idea. All right.
SG-1 was amazing.
SG-1 was great. We still haven't talked about anything, but okay. Moving on.
See, it's D23 because it's disrailment 23 times before we get to the end of the subject.
Oh, man. So I'm just going to skip to the only gaming news I could see from D23, which was, Battlefront 2, they show some stuff. Again, like a lot of the stuff we can't see as people at home. So I assume they'll be releasing more trailers soon, but apparently Battlefront showed some more about supporting cast in its story mode, which we will see when that game comes out as to whether that story mode is worth a damn. I doubt it. I strongly doubt it. Then finally, Kingdom Hearts got a new trailer. Are you a Kingdom Hearts person?
So I watched the trailer when you linked this.
Mm-hmm.
I watched somebody play. I've been watching a podcast video on YouTube called Push Buttons and Talk.
Okay.
And they do a run through of this game. And man, the first game is rough.
I
had to stop watching it after like the seventh episode. I just could not, like, oh my god, get off this stupid. What happens? What's going on? And then I watched a little bit of Games Done Quick and I was like, yeah, I could not get through all that. Like, that just would drive me nuts.
Like, I thought I had never played a Kingdom Hearts game, but then I recently remembered that I had, but was at like a back in the day, there used to be these Sony stores that only had Sony stuff and they'd always had PlayStation 2 set up. And there was a Kingdom Hearts 2 demo disc, and I used to like just fucking not go to school and just go to the Sony store for like a day, like once or twice a week, just skip school. And so we ended up playing SOCOM when we went there, but they had a Kingdom Hearts thing, and I played some Kingdom Hearts, and I fucking couldn't stand it. Like, I think that's my memory of Kingdom Hearts, and probably what's like tainted my view on Kingdom Hearts forever. But it sounds like the first game just doesn't hold up. Is that like the... Is there a remake of the first game?
Is there a remake? Yes. So I think there's a HD remake. There's a couple, like 1.2.1 or 1.2. It's somewhere. I think there is. I'm a horrible... I don't follow it, so I would not know. I think
it's like your fault that those names are indecipherable.
Yeah, I don't... It's like alpha, beta, quadruple director's cut remix of thing. I don't know. The Capcom it. Why don't you guys at this point? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I used to skip school for worst game playing Matrix online in a GameStop. So, you know, I mean, I think you probably had a better time than I did.
Oh, God. Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix is the...
There you go.
That's a PS3 game, which means I will never play it. Because my PS3 is packed up and sell. Like, actually, it's not even this house. It's my parents' house in their garage or something. Yeah, it's not going to happen. This
really,
time...
it's totally regulated to the dungeon.
Exactly. They might be on PlayStation Now, but I don't think we even have PlayStation Now here in Australia yet. I don't know. Anyway, sure. So Kingdom Hearts now has Pixar, which people have been asking for forever. And I guess if you care about Kingdom Hearts, is a big deal. I don't, as is evidenced.
I'm tired of. I'm tired of Toy Story.
It's not really relevant anymore.
I just bought an Apple Watch 2.
Yep.
And I'm running the beta. And they have the Toy Story watch faces. That was one of their big announcements. And I don't get it. I don't get the fast. I get it with the ties that Apple has, but I don't get why Toy Story. Why can't it be anything else that Pixar has done? I guess because it's so big, ubiquitous with kids. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, is it even relevant anymore? Like, I haven't seen anything Toy Story, like pretty much. I don't know, like, boy, fucking since Toy Story 3, really, that was years ago. So it's not like, maybe parents still show it to their kids, but it's not like there's like a massive franchise. I've heard Toy Story 3 is fantastic. I've never went back and watched it, but I don't know. Looking at it.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know. It's not my thing. Not my jam, so I don't.
We're sick of it because we've been around for the entirety of Toy Story.
That's fair.
And it's like Pixar's thing. Like, every time something comes up, it's always fucking Toy Story. But if you're like a kid nowadays, I don't know. I don't think it'll be like as in your face, and they probably wouldn't even know. Or maybe have not even seen the first Toy Story movie. Like, it was fucking old. Anyway, that's the D23 news. There's plenty of movie news and stuff, but look at your comic book or movie websites for that. All right, moving on. Oculus is the only other piece of news we have this week, except for maybe a third. This is actually kind of a big deal, I think.
Yeah.
So
I wish I would have gotten in at this price range, because I still do not have the Oculus Touches.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Shit. So
I probably even not, wait, so you do have an Oculus Rift?
Yeah, so I do. I bought it from a friend, mm-hmm. For $5 at the time. That was decent. It's a great price for it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I was going to get the controllers, but they were $200 alone when they first came out.
Yep.
And nobody was going to, in their right mind, should have spent $199 on a set of controllers for a system that already cost $600.
Exactly. But their pricing was whack, man.
So I held off. Then they went down to $99. And I was like, okay, but still, I don't know. There's not enough content out there for me to really do it. But I really want to. And now it's like, oh, shit. Okay, that's a great price for anyone who just...
Yeah,
it's almost at that why not,
exactly,
for the higher echelon of society when it comes to income. You know, it's kind of like, it's almost at that throwaway money.
Exactly. Yeah, like once it gets under 500 US, it's like, oh well, that's like a third of one paycheck. Like, I can fucking easily do that. All right, to rewind, this is Oculus Rift with the touch controllers on a limited time deal. I think it was a 6-week long deal. where they're being sold for $399, the same price as a PlayStation 4 Pro for the whole package, which comes with obviously the headset itself, your weird mini controller, two touch controllers, I think an Xbox 360 controller as well, and
I believe so, yeah.
Two base stations or two cameras.
Yep.
So you get a whole lot for that $399. In fact, like,
oh, yeah.
This is the point where I was like, if I had launched at this, VR would be in a very different place right now. Like, this is...
I completely agree.
Yeah. The whole world would be different when it comes to VR. If this was closer to... Like, even if... Because, all right, so it's a limited time deal at $399, but the whole package is only going to go back up to $499 as a long-term price for this. Even if it was that, for this whole package, that would mean, like, a game-changing thing for VR. Which we were saying back at the time, like, everyone knew that the pricing was a problem. But this deal is a huge thing. Like, so Squiddle, like, is it too late for $399 to be a thing?
No, I think it's a good spot for it. I think there are people that are gonna be really just jumping at it for the price. But you know, more so than they would have not. I mean, I will put it that way. Of course, people are going to be saying, that's a great price. Let me get that right now. What was more interesting to me is that with the price dip or cut and then inflation coming back just a little bit, that they're announcing a standalone VR product. So now my thought is, oh, that's a great price. Wait, what did you say? Because they announced they're on the same, like a standalone, because I think everyone agrees that the VRs, you know, answer to everything would be no cables,
yes,
a headset, and a controller of some sort or some way to control motion.
Yeah,
and that's your answer.
Specifically, like, I mean, no cables, yeah. But also you don't want, like, optimally you don't want to have to own a beefy gaming PC to be able to run a VR game. Like,
right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know there are a lot of companies have their backpacks you can buy and put a 50-pound strap thing on your back, which is cool, I guess. but then that's a one-trick pony for that's be sitting in the corner.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and there's not a lot of content out there right now that would really drive someone to want that. So I think I'm interested in seeing what they're doing with this single device functionality.
Yeah.
More so than the price cut. Granted, that's because I have one, I've used one, I own one, but I want to see the evolution phases. I'm glad there is an evolution phase coming up, or there's a something else coming up, and we're not just staying with Oculus and Rift V1s, I'm calling them, essentially for 4 years, and they don't need to be on console cycles.
Exactly.
They need to innovate, get them out, change them up. Pull new ones out there. Just keep going at it.
Only go to like a console cycle when you get to a point where the only thing you can do innovation wise is just to iterate. Like at this point, so just to rewind. First of all, I want to say like I think yes, it's too late for $399. I don't think people are going to buy I don't think a large amount of people are going to buy the CV1. Only because like it's almost a suspicious move. The 6 week duration of this price cut is to tie it over to the Oculus press conference thing that's happening in a couple weeks now. And so they're going to be announcing like, you know, the yearly Oculus thing, they're going to be announcing upcoming technologies and stuff. I very much suspect, and many people do, that this is essentially, it's not necessarily clearing the warehouses, but it's to get some goodwill going for Oculus into their new event, because I would be surprised if they weren't going to hint at, if not show off, their CV2, which we have no confirmation of whatsoever. It's just speculation, but I think it's around time. Like, it's been 2 years and they'd iterate really quick at Oculus. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a CV2 coming down the pipeline. But no, the other thing Squiddle is saying is, yeah, they announced, well, no, sorry, they didn't announce. There are significant and believable risks that there will be a $200 price point thereabouts Oculus Rift product, which is going to be mid-tier, inverted commas, that was like the term thrown around, so sit below their Rift but above the Gear VR, that is totally standalone, has its own processor, etc., etc., that's all built into the headset, and primarily, at least as far as the rumors go, it is Inside Out tracking. Or at least it's entirely standalone. There's no cameras and nothing else. Like, it seems like you just put this thing on your head, it goes. But for the way for that to work would be only if it was Inside Out, which means finally full 3D spatialized tracking without having to use like base stations or cameras. And that's a big deal. If they get Inside Out tracking finally to work after what, like, people have been trying to work on that since Valve was working on it. It seems like 6 years, 7 years or something since people started really hammering away at Inside Out tracking. This is,
well, I mean,
huge.
Yeah, and you have, you know, with Google's, with their Tango project style sensors, with what Apple's doing right now when they bought, I can't remember what company it was, they just recently bought to put the technology in the depth perception laser sensing fields in their phone for AR stuff. I mean, there are companies out there that are doing and making the stuff that we need for what we're saying. What you're saying is just the headset for being when I'm in a room and knows where I'm at. And you don't need to have cameras pointing back at you. So I think that market has grown dramatically from where it was three or four years ago to where it could be. And one of the things I'm reading off of a Korean site right now, they're saying that the new Oculus Rift code name is called Pacific.
Yeah.
And they say we'll have a massive price drop on its release. It will also sport some of the most sought after features that fans wanted to add it to VR headsets. So that could be exactly what we're talking about here, but right, speculation, like, still.
There's two things you need to do. You need to do wireless and you need to do Inside Out. If you can do those two things, that's a big game changer. Because, well, for wireless, like, whether it is a standalone headset, which is what the $200 thing's going to be, or if it's actually able to do full 3D spatialization and wireless, but still stream from a computer for high-end experiences, those could be a big, like, that could be really awesome, legitimately awesome. Like, to be fair, it's been done. Like, you're right. Like, I'm not sure about Oculus, but they've actually shown demos of the Vive with an attachment that could make it wireless. People have done that in last year's, not this year's CES. There was some Asian companies, a Chinese company or something, that actually figured out how to do it with a kind of emitter that you plug into your PC, and then you put the emitter at a high place so you don't block the stream. And then from there on, you're just streaming to your headset. I wonder, for me, it really does come down to, because it has already been done, I believe it for the headset. I just wonder how it's going to work for the controllers. Like, maybe you still need base stations or cameras for the controllers, which I think is fine. Like, I don't mind that. The main thing was that tripping hazard of just fucking, you know, and being tethered to your PC. That was like the real deal breaker. I think if you still need cameras, but just for the controllers, that's probably perfectly adequate.
Definitely. Like, I would love to, but one of my biggest things is I was playing the Deus Ex VR experience recently, messing around in that, and one of the things I would love to be able to do is just go play on my couch and just look straight ahead, but still be immersed in 3D, in the three-dimensional world, and run around in that and do stuff in that, as opposed to having to stand up or have a camera set up or be pointed a specific way, just to have full freedom of movement to wherever I am to be able to do that. That would be very cool.
Yeah.
And these
are a big deal. And so, like, the final, like, nail in the coffin or not will be the price. Because if they're going to go for an Apple-like model, which I think isn't necessarily a bad thing, they could potentially be going forward with CV1 being permanently at a $399 or so, or $499 maybe, and then have their CV2 sitting at the original, like, $599. And
I think it'd be a CV1S for smaller.
Hey.
So we'll do the S iteration and everything. Everything in your fuck. You have a kid? It's Jack S. It's Jack S. You know, he's a smaller version of me.
Indeed. So we'll see how that goes. It's a couple weeks here now for the Oculus event. I'm looking forward to it, especially since Palmer's gone, obviously. So there's less of that false promises thing going on. That company has some smart cookies there. and with John Carmack there. Like, I think now that, honestly, and it sounds mean, but now that Palmer's gone, I'm leaning onto Oculus a bit more now, even though they're Facebook. I think they've got some pretty good positive will behind them. It's a good thing, because VR needs that.
I try to forget they're owned by Facebook.
Well, I think it's Facebook money that lets them do this 399 thing.
God, I know it's a necessary evil.
Yeah.
I
understand that more. Oh man, we will see how that progresses. Aside from that, that's pretty much all the gaming news. I just remembered another piece of news that was recently announced, like about yesterday or the day before. Squiddle, do you have any opinions on Ryzen Threadripper? Because I do. I think it's curious. So what we're talking about here is AMD announced their high-end desktop or server, not really server level, but high-end desktop level processors. These are to compete, these are on the Ryzen line, which is up there with the Ryzen 7 and Ryzen 5 and Ryzen 3, which are your normal desktop parts. So you're looking at your 8-core, I think it was 8-core, 16-thread, 6-core and 4-core, 7, 5, and 3. Ryzen 7, Ryzen 5, and Ryzen 3. So yeah.
16-core and 12-core.
Yeah, so the Threadripper is the new thing, and that's been announced just yesterday or the day before, and this is to compete with Intel's 10-core and 8-core parts. I think Intel has announced that they're going to be doing a 16-core 32-thread, but it's not out yet from memory. But they definitely have a 12-core. This thing is for high-end desktops, so you're talking about production level, workloads, so like rendering 8K videos and all that kind of shit. But the crazy thing is, they're looking at 12-core, 24-thread, or 16-core, 32-thread, and the price points are only, and I say only meaningfully, $750-ish, I think it was $750 or something, for the 12-core, and then $999 US dollars for the 16-core. And that compares to like $2,000 or similar, like close to $2,000 for the Intel equivalents. Like, it's a huge, huge deal. But just as interestingly, not only is it priced very competitively, but in terms of like just multi-threaded tasking, as you would expect, these things do blow the doors off everything Intel has out right now. The only thing that may compete with these is that really high thread count one they announced, but isn't out yet.
So it'll support 1 terabyte of RAM, but a single 32 gigabyte LRDIMM DDR4 2133 costs you $1,100. Fuck.
Well, this is for like production, right? Like this is for people who like the tax benefit of write-offs, and tax write-offs from just buying hardware means it's free anyway, right? These are that kind of people.
Right. You know, it's funny. So someone who is like, we work with GIS applications, ArcGIS, mm-hmm. Bentley products, Civil 3D, not the CAD like design area of graphics and auto scale and all that stuff, but more of the engineering side. A lot of these products aren't they don't really take use of multi-threading.
Really? That's interesting.
I mean, they do, like, some of the ones, I mean, I preface that by what the iteration where we're currently at and the iteration of how the market is for civil engineering, where you kind of get stuck because of the cost of these pieces of software to upgrade is a hellacious amount of inflation.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it, we stay with older software until we either our contracts say we need to move because they need it to be used, and then we can do stuff with that. Or we say, okay, well, now it's cost effective for us to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, I was looking at something in a GIS, and it was a GIS or it was some application, and I was looking at it, and it would never use anything more than the first core on a processor when I was taxing it out. And I asked them, and maybe it wasn't GIS, it might have been something else, but I asked them, I said, guys, what is up with your software where you're not taxing multi-threading in your application? And they go, it's not designed for that.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't understand that. How do you guys not, you know how much more powerful processing would be for you guys if you guys would turn it off? And their answer was, well, we are working on it. We have a thing in the pipeline, but it has not been released yet. So when I look at things that do this, there are people out there that will totally use this.
Yes.
You know, when I look at it in my application of where I work, it's kind of like, man, that's so beautiful, but fuck, no one would use it. How do I get one? And so then I'm like, oh, I can't justify it. Shit. All right. Well, maybe someday we will be able to.
So like people at home, like not many things use even a quad core processor, all threads on that. Like Audition, I think, does. Like that's what we use for our sound production. Mm-hmm. Games do not. Let's table that right now. Like games will use your cores, but they will just like use them all at 25%. If you had less cores, they'd use them all at a slightly higher percent. Like they don't use much in terms of core mounts. But the crazy thing is like real production software, like your Auditions, etc. Not Audition, your fucking what was it? The Fireworks equivalent, the video, live video, like your Sony Vegas, etc. Those actually are also already gotten to the point where a lot of those companies have GPU rendering like plugins. So you can already get far higher than any processor can do just by running it off your GPU. So all your live rendering tasks can be run off your whatever, your Titan X or whatever you fucking have in your sweet ass production rig. So like the benefit of going to a really high processor count is very limited in most cases. Like the only time you'd ever really feel it is if you are multi-threading, doing multiple production tasks simultaneously. Like you have to be doing both halves. You can't, you're not just doing production tasks, but doing multiple production tasks simultaneously, which is fair. Like for a small production studio, and I think that's what we aim towards, is like your mid-tier or low-tier production studio where you have a very small number of machines and you have a small number of staff, but you're trying to do a lot per staff and per machine. So you're doing everything like multi-threaded and trying to get everything going.
You know, like one of the benefits I could see, we have our executive assistant of the organization who basically manages all the assistants in the organization and the president of the company. She was having so many issues with applications because she had like 50 different things open at any given time, hundreds of tabs, doing tons of things. I basically found a computer that was a Xeon 8-core processor sitting in the closet doing absolutely nothing.
Nice.
Decked it out, and I gave it to her because I gave her like two other computers and it didn't work. And I gave her, that's like, what? All right, I'm done. I threw the whole kitchen at her, and she's like, it's perfect. Everything runs perfect. Like, oh, thank God. So then she got 32 gigs of RAM and a Xeon 8-core hyper-threaded processor to run all of her stuff. It's just like, maxed out. So
and that's kind of what you, that's kind of the person who needs this, right? And that's still a Xeon 8 core, right? So like we're not even looking at a 16 core processor.
We're talking about an older Xeon. We're not talking about this generation or last generation. It's like just a little bit before. So it's a
very small audience that needs this, and a very you need a very power user.
And it's massive. The thing is massive. The chip itself.
You're talking about Threadripper? Threadripper is hilarious.
Yes, it looks like, you know, you remember the 2.5 HD DVDs that used to come out? I mean, it's literally almost the size of one of those little things.
It's as big as a mini disc.
Yeah.
It is gigantic. If you see the motherboards it's on, they're still ATX form factors, so the fucking processor is like a good like tenth of the motherboard. It's gigantic.
Yeah.
And the even more curious thing is because of the pure size, it just isn't compatible with a lot of the coolers out there right now. So if you have like an old Noctua cooler over, the base plate on the Noctua is probably not even big enough to fucking sit on a Threadripper. It is gigantic. But anyway, so I think for people at home, if you're an HDTV person, as in like you just want to own a HDTV, high-end desktop, high-end HDTD. If you just want to own one of that just for the fun of it and have no reason to really go for it, then yes, this seems like the one to buy. If you're there for production tasks, then it's probably a no-brainer only because it gives you that overhead, but it's not a requirement since you probably aren't even using your 8-core Xeons right now. If you're in a server environment, that's a different thing because there's obvious This is a new architecture, so there's no, like, the primary thing for anyone who runs a server isn't necessarily the power of the hardware, it's the reliability of the hardware. And since this is a new architecture on a new platform,
no fucking person will be running it right away.
Yeah.
In production. Exactly. It's not going to be, they have a lot of ground to make up when it comes to the server farm environment to go, okay, we have a solid product that we
exactly. Like you need to guarantee 365 days a year uptime. Like or at a minimum enough pipeline in terms of like having your support there so you can replace shit like on a fly. Like you need to have that and prove that you have it for years before anyone in the server space will get close to you. So like server farms probably run like a couple year old Xeons, right? They don't need the latest stuff because they care about reliability, having shitloads of spare stock, like that kind of stuff.
Most server cycles are three to five year cycle, depending on what it is. Mm. And so, you know, in 3 years, if they have gained enough confidence in the market, that's when I think you'll see more people maybe trying AMD and seeing how it was running. So I'm glad that they're coming out with all this stuff and that they're pushing the market the way it is. But I don't think we'll see the fruits of it till at least 2020.
Yeah,
I mean, fully.
Probably not. So, like, if you're a stock market player, like, maybe there'll be, like, a speculation bump right now, but there probably wouldn't be, like, an actual real uptake in how many people buy AMD servers, except for that very small market of, like, mid-tier production groups for the immediate future. But the coolest thing that came from this is that Intel has started getting dirty. Like, I don't know if you heard this news, but they had like an investor conference about, or it was either investor engineering conference about their analysis of AMD, and they started throwing out things like glued together processors. Like, they started throwing shade at AMD, actually bagging out the competition, which is actually a really good sign because it means Intel finally realizes that there is competition. Like, they haven't talked about AMD at all for years, so the fact that they're even talking about them now means the game's finally on, and that's a really good thing for everyone. If Intel has to step their shit up, especially if you look at their new platform, I think what was it, X99 parts, I forget what, or X199, I forget the name of it, but the new processors from Intel, the Core i9 equivalents and the up end that the HEDTD or DT Intel i7s are just like really poorly engineered pieces of shit. Like they're rushing things to market now to keep up with AMD, which is a good thing. Like, to be fair, they're ahead of AMD in a bunch of spots, especially in terms of single threaded performance. So, for example, Squiddle's example, you want an Intel for that. You don't want an AMD for something that just slams your first core and your first processor. This is fun. Exciting times are ahead. I'm curious.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm curious to see if there's going to be any multi Ryzen motherboards like there are multi Xeon motherboards for your sweet ass 32 core 64 thread needs.
I don't know, man. It's still a niche market, but we'll see who the EVGA or the player is at that point.
Exactly.
Start really coming out.
Oh man,
I was I read someone, I was trying to find the news article, where a guy bought AMD stock when he bought like 600 shares when it was 99 cents or something, or 1,000 shares.
Damn.
And then now he's just like, oh, sitting pretty. You know, and I'm like, fuck, that would have been amazing if I would have thought of that too.
Yes, that's fair. Like, it's really great to see AMD turn their shit around. I don't know how they're going in the desktop hardware space. For people who don't know, I'm surprised we're talking about so much about hardware, but there you go. The new Vega, what do they call it? Like Founders Edition equivalent part. So it's more like a pre-production Vega. It's for experimentation only, really, for people. They released that. Like, have you heard about that much, Squiddle?
I heard a little bit. I heard a little bit about that. Yes.
Okay.
But not a lot to really talk about it.
The essentially they put out a Vega equivalent part just for people to get started using Vega to get an idea of what the architecture is like. And the upshot is it's kind of not that impressive. It's sitting at about somewhere between a 1070 and a 1080 in terms of performance in some tasks and a bit over 1080 in some other tasks, but nowhere near 1080 Ti or Titan. So this is a production part, so it's like $1,000 for the actual Vega chip. And to be fair, in things that are, as I was talking about earlier, GPU accelerated, so CATIA, this thing like dominates NVIDIA. Like we're talking about in terms of if you're like a person who used GPU compute, this thing is like up to 40 to 200% faster than NVIDIA in some cases. Like CATIA is ridiculous on this thing. And for people that know, CATIA is a 3D rendering and modeling software tool for engineering. So this thing does have its uses, but in terms of like what it says for, what little it says for graphics, because it's not a gaming card, so the drivers aren't made for gaming, all that kind of stuff, it isn't very impressive. So we'll see how Vega is, but we can't really project at this point. It's too early to tell. And with that, that's our news for this Fortnite.
I got one more little thing here.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So I got an announcement, which I thought was kind of funny. PAX South registration opens July 18th mm-hmm. at 3 p.m. If anybody is interested in that, I will probably be going next year. But this year, for the first time, exclusive merch. Merch, guys, we have merch. If you buy PAX South tickets, you looks like not only get PAX South 2018 socks.
Oh, wow.
A set of PAX South 2018 dice and a set of coasters.
I think that's like the perfect tier of merchandise. Are you sure there's no t-shirt, though? I'm surprised there's no t-shirt.
No, yeah, it's too much money. No, oh, wow. They can get probably four shirts out of the two pairs of socks that they're knitting together for that.
I love it because that's like the exactly where you'd want your PAX South merch. You want it in somewhere that no one can see, i.e. under your pants and under your shoes. Like you don't want anyone to know that you're wearing PAX South merch.
Well, there are a lot of people that go shoeless, so that's always a weird thing with PAX. But I dig this, and the only like this is that they do that pin thing where you have to like wait in line to get your exclusive pins. And I don't have time for that shit. I don't want to wait. I'm not a line person. So to be able to just buy tickets and kind of get some swag right away and not the kind of crappy stuff that comes in the bags that they hand you as you walk in. It's kind of nice. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm with you. I think PAX is a good thing for the whole industry. It's very curious to me.
If you're never going to PAX South, it's very chill and laid back too compared to the other two. So it's a lot.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. Nicer. Yeah, cool. And with that, wait, do you have something you hear about a Final Fantasy marriage thing?
Yes. So I have been playing a little Final Fantasy. I forgot to mention, I did pick up a 90-day game card for Final Fantasy online.
Oh, 14.
14, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Nice.
And a group of our regular players decided to have a wedding in the game.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
And it was beautiful. It was spectacular and as dumb as you think it sounds. And I have 200 plus screenshots of the event that I'm putting together in a wedding book montage video for them.
Nice. That's kind of cool. I don't know.
But the only reason it was done is because you get these nifty dresses for doing it, and their characters really wanted the color dresses, so they decided to do it.
Oh, jeez.
So it was not like any true love type of thing at all. It was just for a gimmick, and it was great. That's a great time.
All right. You know, as long as it's – I'd actually be more concerned if this was their actual wedding. Yeah, if it was just like a fun wedding thing, that's pretty cute.
They have a mount that they both can ride at the same time. It's a dual mounted chocobo that they can ride.
Yeah, nice.
So good stuff.
Does it have like strings and like cans at the end of the strings on the chocobo?
No, that'd be better.
But yeah, it'd be better. No. And with that, Squiddle. You said you had we're going to move on to what we've been playing, and you said you had one other thing. Was that the Final Fantasy thing, or was that...
That's Final Fantasy thing.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. All right. I have a very short thing, because I've had a couple of cynical supplements since our last recording, so I've talked about what we've been playing. In short, Diablo 3 is still sick, and the Castlevania anime is freaking awesome, and I loved it. For people who didn't catch those little bits there.
Very, very good.
You watched it?
Did.
Oh, what are your thoughts? How did you like it? Did you
I loved it so much. I was fucking furiously pissed off where it ended. I was so angry. I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, it's that moment where you're like, all right, we got the gang back together. Here we Oh, fuck.
It's ended. I'm so happy they at least already announced the second season's happening, but damn, they nailed that anime.
I thought it's really good. I mean, I wasn't concerned. I know a lot of people said that, well, it's not true to the whole, you know, story that was created. I'm like, it's Castlevania. It's like saying I made a werewolf movie or I made a zombie. I mean, it's Castlevania. There's not really.
Yeah.
There's a concept, I would say. There's not really a strict lore that needs to be followed.
And more importantly, like, the lore that's there, it's not high quality. Like, fuck off. No. Like, it's get over it. But no, I think the reason it was so good is honestly because it was made by Western Studio, like Art House. It's a Western anime, and I think this I just made me wish there was more Western anime out there, because the writing was top notch, the voice acting was fucking actually good. It was just great. It was just great. Happy you enjoyed it. And with that, I think the only thing I got to update you guys from my last Cynical Supplement and our last episode is that I finally put 2 hours into Nier Automata. So, Squiddle, do you remember what Nier was? Like, it came out at the start of the year. I'm not sure if too many people played it.
I remember it, but yeah.
Yeah, so the when the game came out, it was lauded for having like one of the best stories people have seen in a video game in a long time. And it's made by Platinum Games, so the gameplay was lauded very highly as well. Like, we're looking at like 84, 85 on Metacritic, because it does have some issues, or apparently did have some issues. But apparently it was like one of those things like, no, you need to play this for Game of the Year. So I was like, okay, all right, you know what? I finally finished Zelda, so I may as well throw in Nier and see what I think. And I went into Nier with a blank slate. All I know going into it was that I'd played the demo beforehand, like last year or whatever. And I knew there was multiple endings. And that's it. That's all I knew about Nier. And what I found out was, when I played Nier, is that you boot up the game and you select a difficulty. And there's like 4 difficulties to start off with. And I selected normal, as you would. And that's just to frame this whole thing. So I was like, normal, okay, sweet. It's a Platinum game. I played Platinum games on normal before. This should be totally doable. I love Platinum games. This should be fun. But then it starts and it goes, when you start this game, you cannot save. Please play the game further to find out how to save. I'm like, okay, sure. That's fine. Like, whatever. Like, I assume there's like save points. Maybe there's a story related thing. So it didn't necessarily want me to like save any time. Whatever. That's cool. So I play through, what I find out is literally the demo I played before. However, it feels like the demo from last year, which is the start of the game where you're, actually it's a little bit more than demo. In the demo, it's like a boss fight, and then you run through like a complex fighting robots all along the way, and then it finishes with this big boss fight against the robot. This demo starts with you flying towards the complex. And there's actually like a top-down kind of like twin joystick shooter part as you go towards the complex. Like, the whole deal of Nier Automata is like actually mixes and matches multiple gameplay styles during the game. And each gameplay style like smoothly transitions to every other gameplay style, to a point where like you're doing action sequence, you jump onto like a platform, and then the camera pulls aside and suddenly you're playing a 2D platformer. Like, it's insane how good those transitions work and how well the gameplay continues to work as you transition. But yeah, it starts off really interestingly with like a lot of like pretty average voice acting, but interesting gameplay. It starts off with this whole shooter segment, like the shmup segment. Then you get into the complex, and then it's pretty much the demo. It's a good like 45-minute dungeon crawl where you go through this complex and you're beating monsters. And unlike the demo, at least I don't think the demo had this. There's a lot of like secret little areas you can get into, and like a lot of exploration you can do inside the complex. In the complex, you're not getting much exposition, but you're getting introduced to the supporting cast of this game, which is 9S. So your name is 2B. You're an android. And 9S is the model number / name of your supporting cast. It's like this flying dude who helps you out. Anyway, so you go through this whole thing. And what I noticed was from the demo, this is tuned differently. So enemies do far, far more damage than they did in the demo on normal, to the point where you are constantly like, for me, especially since this is the first time I played this game in a year and I'm not used to the combat system yet, I was constantly getting from full health to like almost nothing health over and over and over again. And when you get to like a quarter health or so, you automatically use a healing item. That's how the game balances. So you take a lot of damage, but you automatically take healing items. But there's a fraction of a moment there where you can trigger the animation to taking a healing item, but still take more damage. So in most cases, that's fine. So you trigger the animation, like the screen goes black and white, and like you flip around and you take a healing item, but you're still taking damage. And for the whole start of the game, I had no issues. I'm like, okay, sweet. Like I don't mind this automatic healing system. I'm surprised how much damage enemy is doing, to the point where it almost seems unfair. Like I'm not good at dodging yet. And I will tell you how I get through it in a bit, but it just didn't feel like the game. It seems tuned for someone who's good at the game. And for me, that shouldn't be what normal is about. Like normal should be about people. It should ramp you into it and slowly make you learn the system and then get more difficult as the game progresses. But this, it kind of just starts you off, right? And again, it's the warning to start was, you will find out how to save as you progress. I'm like, okay. So I get to like halfway through where I remember the demo being. I was sort of like, oh, there's no like save points or anything. And I check the menus and it doesn't let you save. I'm like, okay, that's strange. Whatever, I'll keep playing. And then I played more, and enemies started doing more and more damage. And I started getting through my healing items. But you got more and more healing items as the thing went through. So I was like, okay, I was kind of balancing at like 4 healing items, medium heals left. So I was kind of doing okay in terms of combat. I was getting better at it, whatever. There's a boss fight at the end of the demo and at the end of this first section of the game. So there's these two giant saw arms that are on like these cranes that just like spin around and like go around and shit and hit you. And to give you an example, like I would have guessed I have health, like maybe 600, 800 health. If you get hit by either of the two saw blades, they do like 400 health and damage. So you go from like 600 to 200 in one hit, right?
That's rough.
It's rough, and this is on normal. I was like, okay, wow, I was doing okay. I got them to like maybe a third down in their maximum health. Then one hits me. I was immediately go to black and white screen, start using the healing item, and the other one clips me, and I die. Right? I'm like, oh shit.
Okay.
All right, that's interesting. I look at the gameplay clock. It goes to title screen. Right? I'm like, okay, wow, that's strange. Look at the gameplay clock. It says 45 minutes. I'm like, okay, sweet. So there's probably some kind of autosave in there or something. And it's probably like a story reason and blah, blah, blah. It makes no sense that thing did that much damage. Boot up the game, flying towards the complex again. Start up the first level again.
Nope.
I was like, what?
Nope. All nopes. No, thank you.
What?
Wow.
I was livid. At that, I was like, there's no fucking way. I thought I'd missed something. Maybe I was just an idiot and didn't see the save point or didn't talk to 9S or whatever. Like, I thought there was something I was missing. So I Googled it before playing the game again. I was like, okay, what's the deal here? Like, that's fucked up. I shouldn't be two-shot by the boss and then have to play the whole first level game. That's working as intended. That wasn't a story beat. You have to get through the first level before you can even get the option to save. And it's a 45-minute level.
I guess I'm not playing that game.
That's kind of my thoughts on it. So I beat the level. Like I went back second time through. I beat it. I was mad. I was like angry. So that kind of like competitiveness came out. So I was like, fuck you. No, I'm going to beat the shit out of this level. So I beat the shit out of the boss. I took like, I don't think I took a single hit from the boss because essentially the way this game, and it was only my second try, but the way this game gets you is like, if you dodge at the right time, you just sweep back flick and you take no damage, right? But it doesn't have a cooldown to dodge. So you just mash dodge. And it's on a trigger. So I'm just sitting there mashing the trigger and like auto holding down like my turret, just shooting at the boss. I just chipped away the boss, didn't take any damage, just mashed the whole time. I had no effort, no skill, nothing. I just like brute forced by dodging my way through that game.
Awesome.
Got past the first level.
That's how you win. True winner.
Fuck that. So I got to the first level and then I got the shitty cutscene There's a great cutscene at the end of the first level that really sold me on the demo and made me hope I'd love this game. But then the second cutscene you get in the game is after you, you get transported to another place and you're talking there with 9S. And it was like, it's all black and white, and it just seemed like art house for no reason. And the voice acting was average, and the cinematography was pretty crappy. And especially since I was already mad at the game, it did nothing for me. Like, the second cutscene you get in that game just did absolutely zero for me. I walked around, talked to some people, got nothing in terms of, like, made me interesting, and then closed the game. That's my experience so far with Nier Automata.
Wow.
So, Shin Boy, I think it's pretty much Shin Boy's game of the year so far.
Yeah.
So I want to give it another shot, but if it repeats that trick of save, like, if there's fucking barely any save points in this game, fuck this game. I do not have time for that. I have to, like, put aside time to start this game. I only had 2 hours. It's 11 o'clock at night, and it did that to me. I fucking went to sleep at 1 because this fucking game, I was angry at this game. So,
yeah,
I might turn it down to easy. I might turn it down to easy to show this to the story.
I would at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm leaning. I'll probably just chuck it down to easy, play the story through, and then fucking tell it to fuck off. But no, so that's Nier Automata. That's what we've been playing this week. I'm sad to put out a sad note, but hey, if you want something to pick up your day, watch some Castlevania. That's
the best.
Exactly.
Best answer.
And with that, that's our episode for the week. We're going to move on to a Prey spoiler cast. But thank you for listening. It's been a long time since we last had an episode. And this has been a short show, like an hour and a bit, even though we covered a lot of news. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back hopefully in a regular-ish schedule coming up. If not, you'll see more cynical supplements to fill in the meantimes. Everyone's kind of busy at the moment. But with that, thank you for listening. We're going to move on to a Prey spoiler cast starting now.
Yay.
Hey, Squiddle.
Yes.
You finished Prey a long time. You've been wanting to do this for a long time.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, you know, it's been a while. It's been a journey, and I actually recently launched it back up again, because it's kind of one of those games there where once you've played through it, there's not really much point in going back and doing it again.
Okay, sure. And to set it up for anyone who's sticking around just out of curiosity, rather than having played Prey, Prey is a pretty much Bioshocky kind of game. Like, it's you got powers, the powers work in two skill trees, the human skill tree, so you can, like, buffer and better with guns. Then an alien skill tree, which I really like the way you unlock it, where you scan aliens.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's pretty cool. And the way you scan them, so the more you scan, the more powers of their type you unlock per type of alien. And then that slowly, like, unveils more and more. So you can, like, morph in one tree, and then you can, like, have elemental powers in another tree. And I forget what the last one was, like, metal powers or magnetic powers or something. Electric powers.
Yeah, I can't even remember. Well, I can't remember because I didn't use them. So. Oh,
high five. So I last talked about Prey. I'd gotten about 60% through that game, I think, if I was to guess. And I went, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go human-only run because I'm a human. And I want to prove that humans are badass. So I'm going to fucking high-five with Squiddle, human-only this shit. So I ignored all the alien powers, only went human, only went to guns, boosted the shit out of my shotgun, and then just started wrecking everything. That's how I played that game. Oh,
should I spoil it for you now?
I heard there's a sweet laser. I was about to get it. I heard there was a sweet laser.
Yeah, it's all right.
All right. No. What do you want to spoil?
My main spoiler of it was, I think I'm going to hold back on that. Are you going to finish the game?
No. That's why I'm here for the spoiler cast. That's why.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to hear it.
It is, we played through, or attempted to play through, in some cases, straight human. In the end, you kind of realize you are not human. You are the test subject. And I recommend watching the final cutscene because it's pretty awesome.
Okay. All right. It's good.
It's out there.
All right.
It's good. It's good. The one thing I love that they did is there's random people throughout the ship that you can save or not save.
I really like that.
You have choices. And those choices, while not that meaningful, really on your ending, do come back in a way that's kind of like, oh, puts a nice little bow on it.
Nice.
So that was kind of fun. Essentially, of the people that you save at the end, you remember those floating robots that you have? That you're like your U-bot that's floating around. That's like, I am you. I'm your recording.
Yeah.
Everyone that you save is dead. You are literally living and playing this whole thing in a simulation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You are the main creature that they are interacting with, trying to learn about you. Either I don't remember if you went too far in the experiments, or they just put the memories of you in you to replay what happened. But all of your friends in the game are just AI robots that are watching you through the entire time and are tapping into what you're doing to maneuver their avatars through your replay
of
the simulation. And so when you come out of it, you see your brother, who actually is real, and you find out that it already went to Earth. It got to Earth, and Earth is basically destroyed.
It is
gone.
Wow.
Completely gone. And they're fighting it back, and they're trying to learn how to become peaceful with these creatures through this experiment. And their reactions in the game, they kind of give you this little monologue of how he helped and really helped me or didn't help me or killed me right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your interactions with those characters. And at the end, my favorite thing is you have a choice, as you do always, to either accept the hand of your brother and try to establish some form of peace with the aliens and humans, or just downright fucking murder everyone in that tiny room that you're in. End game.
Damn.
It is probably one of the strongest and a really good ending. Like, not the strongest, but it's a really good ending for a game this year so far.
That's cool.
I played.
All right, I'm probably gonna end up watching a story super game. That's probably what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, that would be. I would definitely recommend that.
Yeah.
But my issue, and I went back in and I threw my cheat stuff on and just maxed out everything, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. All right, you know, but the alien weapons weren't anything that I would say. The only thing I could see that really would help would be the mimic ability,
right?
Like go into something type stuff. And there was one other one that I can't remember, but really there wasn't much there that I felt was necessity to finish the game.
Yeah. Once I found out you could you could punch buttons in locked rooms by breaking glass and just using that Nerf gun kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you don't need any of the alien powers. Like once you do that, it's like, okay, I would have only wanted mimic so I could make myself small, and I would only need that to get into those weird like locked rooms and stuff. But no, the that's really cool. I like for me the it is pretty much comes down to that gameplay loop, and I found that the guns weren't that fun.
They're not, no, and the fact like your Nerf gun you get, you'll if you read through a lot of the stuff through the gameplay, they're like, oh, I made a version 4.2 or here's version 3, but there's no difference. They don't.
Yeah.
It's kind of a joke almost. Like they wrote it in as a joke that this Nerf gun is version 4.5 when you first start, but there's no difference. It doesn't do anything different.
There's no different, but I think for me, it is those side characters that I started liking to some degree. Like finding out that they're all kind of like a simulation is a weird, interesting twist on that. But like the couple, the two girls, who had that adorable romance thing that happened to them, and the ones that ends up dead in a freezer or whatever, like that was legit. I felt that. That was a really good thing to be there and witness in post.
And you really wanted to kill that fucker. Like, I was like, I had so many other quests to do, and I was like, so the quest system was shit the way that they set it up, because it was hard as fuck to understand where to go.
Oh yeah,
in my opinion, a lot of the times, and it was very badly designed.
I really don't like when having to look through terminals to find out where other people are in the thing. That was just annoying, man. I wish you could just go up to terminal and then put it on your mini map or whatever. Like I fucking
And his ending, his end arc of his mini quest line, I guess you could say, was
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was kind of like, I mean, you literally chase him into an AirPod or an escape pod, and he goes, ha ha, bomb, boom, blows himself up, like while you're approaching him. And that's right. It. Like,
oh, wow. Okay.
Dude, there was no real good like battle scene or anything. It was kind of like, oh.
Yeah. Man. But do you get a moment with the living girl? Like, do you get to like talk to her again or anything? At least that might be worth it. I liked her a lot. She seemed like a badass.
I don't think so.
Okay. Because I was really, because it's one of those things where she's like,
but
she's out
she's
in space.
Not,
just like around.
Yeah, she's not dead.
Yeah.
I don't remember. She didn't die. I think she gets to the like escape area or the hangar, but you don't ever see her again, I think.
Oh, that's sad. I would have liked to like say hello or whatever. Because I was hoping that the more people you save, they start doing stuff around the ship for you or something. Like I would love that to happen, but it doesn't sound.
Oh,
like
there was none of that. No, yeah. There was absolutely none of that. That was a bummer.
Yeah.
I do love the things you can do though. I would say like you can leave the game early,
mm-hmm.
and it will literally be just a game over. But it's like you escaped.
Oh wow,
and,
that's kind
of
cool.
So the escape pod on top of your brother's office.
Yeah,
there's a way to get into it. And if you get into it before you actually finish the game, all of a sudden you die and you hear your brother go, like, "It's not over. This isn't the way it was supposed to happen." Mm-hmm. And then you hear a female voice saying something like, "Let's try again." Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you start over, back like in your last save. So it was kind of like, oh, okay, well, there's something else going on here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I got like, oh, there's like, is this a simulation within a simulation? What's going on?
Right.
But there was one guy you could save, and he was one of my favorite. I think it was like, not Isaiah. It was someone. He was a doctor that came on board that was really buddy-buddy with your brother.
Mm.
And his thing is he was stuck in a container in space. Like he was floating around the ship, around the space station. And so you had to control, like you had to go to a console, type in the code of that box that he was in and say manual or automatic docking procedures go.
Yeah.
And then it would dock and then he would get out. But I didn't know where to go for it. And I saw him in the thing and I was like, okay, cool. He goes like, here's the code to let me out, but don't type it in or something like that until we get there. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, hold on a second. I typed in the code and it opened up and he is all of a sudden like, no, what are you doing? And then it opens up, air comes out and it's just a corpse.
Oh, no.
It floats out of it. So there's some cool like little,
that's kind
of
cool.
You can kill people inadvertently or
that's pretty good. I like that. The thing, like this game had a lot of cool, interesting character moments and nice writing in a lot of cases. But for me, it's just that gameplay loop just didn't keep me interested. Like it was more like the gunplay wasn't good. The powers were, they didn't feel like meaningful enough, really. Like that.
Right.
Like for a long time, I thought like I really needed that strength thing to lift really big boxes until I realized like, no, I can just craft like a null grenade. And put it in pretty much anywhere which is a good thing and a bad thing. Like, there's a lot of ways to solve any situation in the game, which is good. But the problem is there's so few types of situations that you do end up finding, like, one solution that works for pretty much everything. And in most cases, that's a null grenade and a shotgun. Like, that's, like, if you have a null grenade and a shotgun, you can get through that game. You know, no problems.
That's pretty much how I ran through the whole thing. That and the pistol.
Yeah.
I always, but the pistol ammo. I'd say ammo for everything was very hard to find.
I ended up crafting my highest percentage of things I crafted was shotgun ammo, like that whole game.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, I pretty much grabbed everything, spare guns, whatever. I grabbed every piece of metal I could find, chucked it in a recycler, made shotgun ammo. That was the one consistent thing. And then those kits that upgrade you. So like those are the only two things I ended up crafting, and I just crafted them over and over and over again. And that was it. Like, so the gameplay wasn't deep enough, and I think that's what really didn't. Like that's the part. And the enemies, though they were varied, the fact that they were palette swaps in a lot of cases just kind of like made me shrug. And yeah, that's kind of cool. But overall, like what are your thoughts about Prey? Did you like it a bunch or?
I think I would be interested in seeing how they could do a sequel off of it. I would be interested in that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with games that give you two choices at the end, it's hard to do a sequel based on what your choice was. When I my first playthrough, I chose to work with him.
Yeah, I'd probably do the same
thing. It was like work with him and like, this is going to be a start of a beautiful relationship type thing.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Uh-huh.
Immediately reloaded the thing and was like, fuck it, die, kill everything. And so I did that. And I was like, okay, that felt a little better, actually. That was more my style. I was like, okay.
Start the war. Let's bring this on.
Let's do this.
Oh, man.
So I don't know. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see what they could do. But
the whole simulation within a simulation thing is an interesting idea, except for the fact that I'm not surprised by that at all. And that's a sad thing because, like, when the game starts, you're in your apartment, and the only thing that you need to do to get out is break a window. Like, it's not like it's Fort Knox or whatever. Like, you break a window and you're immediately out in the rest of the facility. Like, it's nothing. So that made me think, like, okay, wait, this is too simple a construction for a ultra brilliant scientist, like, to not figure out that he's in a simulation. Like, it had to be a simulation in a simulation pretty early on. I was already thinking that would be the case. So like the crazy thing to me is the setup as to why it's a simulation in a simulation. I wouldn't have thought that the aliens essentially won or whatever. That's a kind of cool twist on it, but I'm not surprised. And that's, I would say, like, yeah, this game lives and dies by its writing. It really does depend if A, you're into like a BioShock kind of game.
Right.
That's definitely like why you'd get behind this, and B, if you like the writing. And to me, like, yeah, I like the writing, but this doesn't, even BioShock is boring, and BioShock are 10-hour games. This feels like a 20-hour game. Like 20, I was already 15 hours into it before it gave up.
Let's see what let me see what my, where is it at on here? There it is. So yeah, 21 hours. So yeah. It's like take maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours from just, you know, fucking around in it.
But exactly. Yeah. I'm like 18 or something hours in that game. Let me bring it up. Give me a second. If I'm less, I would be surprised. No, 17 hours. I'm 17 hours into Prey 2 and I gave up. Like, I don't think that kind of game can have steam. Like, I don't think it really deserves a 20 hour or so playtime. If it had better shooting, maybe, and more interesting gunfights and funner gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely was kind of a, you know, the enemies were bullet sponges in a lot of cases, and you didn't know if you were doing more damage with, like, it didn't feel like you were either doing more damage with a shotgun
exactly
or with an automatic gun, or, you know, and then
there's no feeling behind any of the weapons.
And
the crazy thing though is, like, a lot of enemies, when you hit them with the shotgun, they stun for a second, so you can just unload, and it's just humorous. Yeah. Like, especially the those night stalkers or whatever the fuck it is. If you get them in the head with a shotgun, they pause for a second. So you can just keep shooting and they just die. It just totally strips it from any interestingness of whatsoever in terms of like a difficult fight or whatever. And null grenades just wreck everything.
Those were amazing little thing. I had a fun time just like gathering as much as I could, like in one little area, and throwing that thing down, seeing how much stuff you can get out of it. That was cool. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like there's lore that I wish they would have gone into explaining a little bit more. Like when you're going through the tunnels or whatever the system for moving objects around. I can't remember what they call it. Like the mad guts system or
whatever.
The guts. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're going through the guts, like you see that ribbon, the ribbon orange glow stuff that's just hovering. Yeah. They don't really ever do much with that.
They say that the creature makes it, but they don't say what it does really.
And there's maybe two, but one I distinctly remember point in the game where you go through it the first time and you have kind of like that flashback feel, or like that whole, you know, like you're a part of this genome type mind thing, but you never really get anywhere with it. It doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
You know? So I was kind of like, well, that was a, okay.
Yeah.
I found myself really loving the D&D aspect of the game, because people who were playing D&D.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was great.
And then I screenshotted all their characters' D&D cards.
Yeah. So the character sheets are cool. And they're like well drawn. And I like that a lot as a tabletoper myself. But the I think overall I liked it. Like I think it's a good like 7.5, 8 out of 10 game. Like I didn't mind it at all.
I could say it felt like a $20 game. Like I would, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean I think
it's worth playing, but don't pay full.
It's
price.
Worth playing, but not at the full price that it came out with. And I didn't have any bugs. I didn't have anything that Same. Crashed my game or that was horrible.
Yeah, yeah, it worked fine. Just, technically, it looks kind of eh. Like I think that's doesn't look bad. It just doesn't look great.
No, but you know, and I like the aspect like you could rerun on a glass floor and shoot the bottom out and fall down. Like they had a lot of good,
yeah,
you know,
sandboxy kind of things.
Yeah, and I appreciated that a lot. Like they had a one where you could go like turn electricity on and the water would get zapped, you know, or something.
Yeah,
you could run on the treadmill for crying out loud. You could get on a treadmill, turn it on, and actually have to hold the sprint button down to keep up going forward. So that was kind of fun. Like they had a good stuff in there, but just be a little bit more iterative on everything and kind of flush it out. Like Absolutely. If you would have started that game seeing people walk around there and had more of the experience of you do your first walk through maybe just the main area and you go to your office and you do this and then they ask you like, okay, well, brother's like, I'll see you tomorrow at the thing, and then you go to bed and then you wake up and then you start the loop.
Yeah.
To have gotten that little that personal feeling of seeing everybody or interacting with some of these people beforehand.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that would have
given more substance to it.
Yeah, I think that's the right word, like substance. Everything in the game is perfectly adequate, but none of it feels like it has a really like real depth or substance to it. And specifically, it is really the characters, except for like each character has this kind of depth, but kind of a depth in the same way that you can have depth in a novel or whatever. Like you don't really feel like you get to know them. Like the thing a video game can do is it can make you know a character better than almost any other media, where you're not only having their voice acting and this that stuff, but you're also watching them and interacting with them. You can ask them questions, like that is a thing video games can do that nothing else can. And it doesn't really obviously leverage of that at all. Like except for the robots, you don't have anything you really talk to.
Right.
And beyond
it's
like
too alone. It's too alone.
Yeah.
Like you almost feel like you're too on your own.
Yeah.
But where you feel there should be more things happening, and they don't give enough spookiness for the alone to feel like it's own entity. So you're like, you're not alone. You're with an evil. Yeah. They don't really give that. So you are literally just kind of walking around a barren ship shooting at things.
Exactly. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like Dead Space did it where you did feel alone but you were surrounded. You're constantly in danger in Dead Space. But in this, once you get like a little bit into the game, like you have enough power to deal with anything, least. But also like the enemies, you kind of, because they're all powerful for each other, you kind of already know what's around the corner. Like it's going to be one of these things. Like there's no way for the game to really surprise you because you see all the enemy types pretty early on, and it's a pretty long game.
I think they try a little bit with like when you hit certain areas of the game or you've progressed through certain parts of it, they start like repopulating the areas with more aggressive enemies.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But then there was a point where it's like, fuck, dude.
Exactly.
I just want to get back to my office. Like, just stop.
That was the main thing. Like, the first time that happened, it was like, that's freaking cool. I went back to an area I was there before, and it was full of totally different enemies and really different stuff I'd not seen before, because at that point I hadn't seen the glowy thing before, and it was there. Mm-hmm. But the third time I went back, I was like, well, fuck, I fucking cleared this place twice. Like I'm just getting over it. Especially since the combat loop isn't that great. So it's like, fuck, I don't want to fucking clear another place again. I don't have to kill
anything. It almost felt like they were trying to make me waste my ammo.
Exactly.
A false sense of security and being able to do things to force me to feel in a panic mode.
Yeah.
And the only thing it really made me feel was pissed off I had to do this again.
Like if I think that was a large part of it as well. Like, if you could just, like, sprint through a lot of sections of the game because you'd already cleared that area, I think that would have sped it up in a good way. I wonder how I'd feel about it if they just literally, like, left areas that you'd cleared clear. Like, that'd be pretty good, I think, if they'd done that. Anyway, but overall, like, yeah, again, I don't want to say I hate this game. Like, I like this game. I just not... if you have the choice between this and maybe like Zelda, play Zelda, like I did.
Yeah. I had fun with the goo gun or the glow gun or whatever the glow cannon.
It was really good to get around.
And I found myself like making things more difficult to traverse using the cannon than just trying to find the actual way to get to where I need to go. So when I first got the gun, I went, you know, you get the gun, you turn behind, and there's elevators that aren't working behind you.
Yeah.
And I took my glue gun and I went in the elevator that said, the one that said, you know, do not enter, and the one that said enter. And I was like, well, I don't want to do not enter. Okay. So go to the one you enter. And I'm like, well, this isn't working. Well, maybe that's what this thing's for. And so I ended up kind of shooting a stair,
yeah,
you know, spiraling up. And then I got up there and then I did that. And then I realized that if you actually just unlock, you know, mechanic hacking or rebuilding or whatever, fucking elevators work.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, okay. So I didn't realize that. I was like, oh.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
That's the crazy thing, because it's not like you don't have get many points, especially since you can craft your own. So you do get to the point where you can just hack everything, and it's just not a big issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I love the glue gun. My only negative with the glue gun was I'm surprised they didn't let you keep sticking. Like, I'm surprised that once it hardens, you can't stick it.
Yes,
that was annoying. I was like, that would have been a really cool thing if you let me do it. I'm pretty sure Ratchet and Clank or something did something where you could keep sticking to the same thing a while ago. Anyway.
Yeah.
Overall, good game. Interesting story. I mean, you convinced me to watch the supercut. I'll definitely watch the supercut on YouTube.
Worth it just for the ending.
It'll come up.
And
with
I tried the speedrunning stuff. So that's why when I jumped back into it, because I saw some of the speedrunning techniques. And man, the first fucking one, I can't get. I can't do it just to get out of the room before everything happened. I can't get it. And I thought maybe they patched it out. And looked at the forum, and nobody was really specific on which version it was, but they weren't saying don't use this version. So I guess it was still in there.
Mm.
I just could not get it to work for the life of me. But maybe, and I thought maybe it's because I have my FPS too high, and then maybe I have to have an FPS limiter. And I'm like, I'm not. There's no one that says, here's how you do it. And I wasn't about to attempt to go through all that just to do this. I just thought, if I could do this with my setup, I'll give it a shot. But
nice. You play it on PC, I assume?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shooter. Like, I played on PC as well. I think it might also been why the shooting wasn't that interesting, because it's just too easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, loved it. Before we break off, and for people who just want to hear about Prey, we're going to start talking about Prey there. I just want a quick check in there. Where are you at with your Zelda play? I'm really curious. Have you played Zelda a while?
I haven't picked it up in a while.
It's a pretty good game.
I haven't even updated it. Like, I don't have the updates. Like recently at all or any of that stuff still. Mm-hmm. I have the Mammoth done and I have the Eagle done.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have two more interesting
ones left open.
I wanted to ask you something here. Everybody said that game tells you that everyone's like, we went to the Zora one or we went to this one first. There was nothing that told me to go anywhere when I started that game. I didn't see any path that said, oh, it's obvious, you go here first. The people were like, do it in this order. I just kind of wandered around until I found one.
I think.
And then I ended up doing the Mammoth first.
So there isn't a path. But if you start at the start of the game and then go to the first actual quest, which is that old lady, then go to the second quest, which is the other old lady who looks like a child, the closest one to that is the Mammoth one. That's it. That's like the only thing you can say is close to a path in that game.
So I did the king. I got the thing. I flew off the thing.
Yeah. Then you need to talk to the babysitter of Zelda. What's her face?
Oh, the old lady. Okay.
Yeah. And then she sends you to the Sheikah lady. The one to upgrade the Sheikah slate.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And from there, the closest one's the Mammoth. And that's the only reason that anyone would say there was any form of first one.
How do people keep saying, like, oh, they do these ones first, and this was like the obvious path to go? Because
they're wrong.
I was like, okay. Well,
there is no obvious path in that game.
Okay, I guess I should preface that is the one I'm thinking of is Dan Reichert saying that.
He's a fucking idiot. Like, fucking fuck Dan. Like, okay. Fuck that guy.
So.
There's no on paper first one to do, and they're all equally easy, so there's no reason to do anything order. I would say the hardest in terms of the quest to get there is the but the Gerudo one, which is the camel. Okay. That's only because I fought everything through the whole. There's like this.
Yeah, that's the mammoth. That's what I'm talking about. The mammoth.
The camel. The camel. Right.
That's the electrical one. The desert. Right.
That's the desert. Yeah. 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 Oh,
yeah. That's the one I did first.
When you said mammoth, I thought you meant the actual elephant one, which is the top.
No,
right.
I'm sorry. I'm confusing them. I apologize. My apologies.
That's fine.
I did the desert one first. That was my first one.
Yeah. So that's actually not what most people do first. Only because it's further. It's the furthest away from the actual quest start. Right? The quest.
See, I just kind of wandered. I just kind of went. Like, I'm going to go in this direction and see what happens. And then,
So mammoth is what most people do first, but the camel is what most people do, like, third or fourth, only because they most people follow that counterclockwise kind of, because they start there, it's like, oh, well, might as well go to the other closest one, then go to the closest one, then go to the closest one. There's no reason.
And I don't know, like, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just not playing it like, I'm just kind of wandering around until I find things. I'm not exactly looking for specific points to go to or specific things to do. And after doing two of the bosses or dungeons, they kind of felt very,
Yeah, I'm with you.
And that's kind of when I stopped. I kind of felt like, yeah, I want to go save Zelda, but I also need like five more hearts. And I kind of really
So the good thing is
she can hold on for another 100 years.
So each of the dungeons give you a heart. That's two. And then getting the Master Sword gives you a heart. So that's three. In terms of like the, you have to do this with the little quest line, and that makes you do a couple of shrines that gives you a heart. So that's three. So all you have to do is get two more hearts, and then you got the Master Sword and your...
Yeah, but I've already done so many of those little trial things, and I'm just tired. I'm
like, with you. Dude, I'm 100% with you. I will be the last person to say I did 50 trials, didn't like any of them. I like two, actually. Sorry, I like two of the 50-something trials I did. That game, I don't see the praise. It shouldn't be 97 on Metacritic, I don't think.
I think it's a great change.
Yes.
From the Zelda style, which I'm okay with.
Mm-hmm.
But something about it, I just feel like I would love to see almost like a remake of A Link to the Past in that exact same palette.
Yeah, just like,
and maybe not the same story, but maybe the same style of going to. I know people are going to say, "Well, Skyward Sword," and fuck off. but you know, going between like a dark and light world type thing. Like, I liked that feeling. You could do it on the fly, and things were different. You know, and I never did Skyward Sword. I tried it.
I was actually expecting, like, after seeing, I watched what's his face, not Skyward Sword, but I watched. That really old one, I think it might be in Link to the Past or whatever, where there is two time zones that you keep swapping between, right? And you just go like, you use this like gem or something, and you make, anyway.
He's a mirror. He uses the mirror to transition.
And I was actually expecting this game to have a twist and make you have to do that. And I was like, wow, that'd be really cool. There was like a whole second half of this game in this dark world. I was expecting that to be why people were like, whoa, this game is fucking incredible. But after I finished the four pretty average dungeons, pretty easy and average dungeons, but fucking no difficulty whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't see it. But that said, like, what I would suggest to you is just fucking mainline it. Most people say the opposite to this, but I liked it when I finished it. I mainlined it, didn't do any of the random side stuff, except apparently there's two or three really good side quests. There's one for the guy who plays the accordion, which is apparently really good.
I've seen those. Those are difficult as fuck.
Okay, I haven't seen what it takes to, but yeah.
Well, like, okay, it was like, for instance, like there's one of them where you get to some of these little rock islands, and he basically goes, "I'm playing a song, and it's a song of people," and then you have to kind of like glide on a gust of air between a puzzle format, almost like you're going to go from this rock, you're going to catch this glide, and it's going to take you on this gust, and you can't touch anything. You don't want to go down to the water. So I don't like those puzzles.
That sounds hard. Personally. Holy shit.
And it kind of seems frustrating. And then there's enemies that may attack you while you're doing it. You got to kind of avoid. And it's kind of like, you're cool, but sure. All right.
So the way I did it was, I didn't do that stuff either, but I essentially just mainlined all the dungeons. And then what I did was I looked up a guide and just straight up hit every single one of Zelda's memories in order. And I did that in order. Then I watched it through. Then I beat the game. And you get more cutscenes. And that, like, the catharsis of getting that storyline told to you finally. And then you get like this, you unlock, the last memory is in Ganon's castle. Or not the last memory, but like the 16th or something memory is in Ganon's castle. So I got that one. And that unlocks a 17th or a hidden memory. And then you watch that one. Then you beat the game, and it gives you like this really nice storyline, and like it just it kind of ties everything up in a story, and that for me like made the game good. Like if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have liked it at all. But the fact that I got all that story at the end, then beat boss, and then beat and then saw the ending credits and like the extra cutscene you get there, that all tied it in a bow in a wonderful way. And I suggest doing that if you're okay. If you're struggling with getting the impetus for finishing that game, do it that way, and I think it works.
I mean, I don't know what the ending is. I would love it though. I would love if they would make it like the final thing that you remember is that you go, or the final thing you do is you kill Ganon, but you actually kill Zelda, and then all of a sudden you become like this statue in the castle of like the hero, and so she's dead, and then like the next game is. You know, all of a sudden you come back to life and everyone in Hyrule hates you. Damn. And you have to go back in time to rescue her from before,
from yourself
before she was even holding him back 100 years prior.
Right.
You know, so then you kind of create the thing where you end up knocking yourself out, putting yourself in there. You like save her, but you kind of start the whole.
That would have been great too. I would have loved loop. If like what, actually happens is that she's speaking to you from the past. It has been 100 years since you woke up.
Oh.
And so she's been speaking to you from the past and trying to get you ready, because when you finally get to the castle, you teleport to the past and you meet her when she goes to fight Ganon.
That would have been cool.
That would have been fucking cool, but no, that's not what happens. Anyway, yeah, you know. I hope you finish that game. It's pretty good.
I think I will for game of the year at least finish it.
Yeah. And I'll try to put more time into Nier. That game actively makes me want to hate it, so I don't know.
Games have come out? I don't even know what games have I played this year now.
Professor Layton's coming out like tomorrow or something. So I'm going to play that first before I play Nier.
I'm thinking of a different one game. Okay, now Professor Layton. I'm thinking of something completely different.
Let's have a look what's coming up. Let's see. Kirby's coming out.
Like Overwatch came out this year, right? Or did that come out last year?
Last year. That was last year. Are you talking about overall games this year?
Like, I'm trying to think of what I've played this year that has come out. I wish Steam had a thing you could search and do like by year.
Oh, most recently. It would tell you
what year, what year the game was released.
Ah, that's true.
Like, that would be nice.
I think PUBG will be a pretty big standout towards our game of the year in terms of Final Fantasy Zodiac Age came out. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Shin wants me to play that game.
Final Fantasy 12? It's a good game. I liked it a bunch. And the new one seems really cleaned up, even though it still runs at 30 frames a second, which is strange. Very strange.
I will say that Wolfenstein comes out in 2 months.
Wow, yeah, that could be a good one coming up.
Professor. 2 months, maybe three, something like that. Anyway, like right now, my game of the year is Zelda because I don't have anything else that's really I've played.
Yep. Let me look at my game of the year list so far. We should end out the show, but since we're running like short anyway, I may as well just have a look. Give me a second here. My number one's Horizon. That's easy pick at the moment.
If it was on PC, I would play it.
That's a good game. Persona like, 5 like for me, two.
Like my argument is they're saying Red Dead Redemption, the new one, will not be on PC. I've never played the original one, and I will never play this one because
that's
I don't feel like putting money towards a console. I'm done with consoles. I'm just done.
So my view is Horizon, Persona 5, Zelda, Yakuza 0, and then Nier sitting at placeholder number 5, but I doubt it's going to stay there. I think it's going to go down. I'm going to play Nier at some point as well, too. Praise City at number 6 at the moment, only because of placeholder. Like, except for this year had 3 standout games, Persona 5, Horizon, and Zelda, and everything else has just been eh. That's so far from me.
But Doom came out last year. Doom was last year.
Doom was 100% last year. That was a good game. So with that, thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Scotchcast. First one in a while. Hopefully we can get regular again, but I'm making no promises. You will, however, have a minimum of cynical supplements going forward. Squiddle, any last words for the crew or any plugs?
Don't take a muscle relaxer with a Xanax unless you want to drool all over yourself.
Good tip, kids at home.
There you go.
I'm looking for this game. My plug is going to be the new Layton game, which I talked about last time. There's a new Layton game with starring Layton's daughter, and you're like a detective, and that is really cool. It's on 3DS, and it's coming out like within the next few days. It's not called Professor Layton anymore. It's just called Layton, and that's how you could probably find it on the 3DS. I wish it was on Vita. Sorry, not Vita. I wish it was on fucking Switch. Fuck. I'm so over having to keep my 3DS around, but whatever. Play the new Layton game. Looks to be awesome. And with that, thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.